Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Baseball Prospectus Top Prospect Podcast Series here on the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network. I'm your host, Smith, and spicing it up without Jeffrey being my co-host this time to do the Oakland Athletics, we're going to go with Mark DeLucci. DeLucci? DeLucci? I probably should have asked that before.
It's all good. Dang. No, we gotta let it roll. I'm coming straight from improv class, so we just got to move with it, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Like Michael Scott's improv class from The Office.
Exactly.
Mark, how's it going today?
It's going well. It's going well. Been busy. Glad to, I feel a small portion of Jeffrey's pain because I had two prospect write-ups for BP and then one of my own for another site. So I'm happy that I'm mostly done. I'm mostly done on the prospect front for until we get into the season and actual games to write.
Right. It's funny because, you know, Jeffrey's kind of echoed that, you know, he's kind of feeling a little burnt out on going through all these lists. And it's just like, my brother, just wait until spring training starts. Wait until you're in Arizona. Wait until I'm in Florida. Like, you're going to wish that it was still the offseason at that point.
Yeah, wait until that first time you're texting with a scout or someone like that. And they're like, you know, I know this guy didn't hit last year, but he's doing something this year. And you're like, all right.
Yeah. And
what
I think
do
that's
I make
a good,
of this?
Yeah, I think that's a good segue, actually, into the Athletics farm system.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, though, let's go through the names, right? They traded away, six, seven guys last year. Sean Manaea, Matt Olson, Matt Chapman, Frankie Montas, Chris Bassett, Lou Trevino. I mean, I'm sure I'm probably missing a couple of Sean Murphy this most recent offseason, but you know, last year is when they traded all the real big names away. And, you know, it's funny because if you take those trades out of the picture and you look at the Athletics farm system, you would probably say, okay, it's probably slightly below average, but it's not abysmal. But when you add in those trades as context, I mean, we were talking about this before we went live, but you can't help but feel a little underwhelmed with the state of the farm system, given all those trades.
Yeah, I mean, you're really looking. I mean, when you're looking at a system, right? Like, there's simplistic, right? Like, there's two things you want to get from your farm system, unless you're the Padres, which you only want one. But if you generally want like a steady stream of like just solid big leaguers and role players, just to keep filling out the roster, to keep having depth for injuries, and then you know you want to have some star power at the top, and right the way you know. If you're talking about a top five farm system in baseball, it's because they have both, right? Or they have some absurd amount of players with like elite upside. And I think that's what it is like with the A's. Again, like you talk about looking at this farm system on its own, they have like one guy who I think you can feel pretty good about is on at least above average everyday player trajectory in Tyler Soderstrom. But that's kind of the only guy at this point that you can look at and at least from where I'm sitting and feel like great about that outcome. And now again, to be fair, you know, Shea Langeliers is there, and obviously catchers are such a difficult kind of thing to evaluate because of just how poorly they perform offensively at the big league level. So, you know,
right.
I could give you that one as well. But again, like you mentioned, like you got a core of a playoff roster that has left this team. And that's before even talking about, I'm pretty sure, right, they've had, I mean, because of their maneuverings in terms of their market classification, they get compensatory picks. You know, I believe they have some free agent departures that they got an extra pick for, too, in some recent drafts. Like, it's just, again, like, we're talking about two guys who I think have, like, really high upside, and then a lot of guys who it's like, I can see contributing, but, you know, the questions about what that ceiling is, whether you're talking about a 40 grade role player, middle reliever, or a 50 grade, big value is where most of these guys are. And again, for a system that, like you mentioned, has given up so much, has so little at the big league level, which I imagine we'll get to at some point, like it is underwhelming. And I think on top of it, right, it's also just the added element of, you know, this is the Oakland Athletics, and you're looking at a great prospect. You're like, well, maybe they become good enough that they trade him in 4 or 5 years. Cause that's just, you know, like it, there's also such a, and again, look, this has been the story of, you know, under forced ownership, under the A's ownership past 20 years, you know, and under forced ownership, forced GM tenure, and, you know, under the current ownership. But it's just, again, it's been such a massive, you know, overhaul. Like, this was not a couple guys walking in free agency. This was not making one trade to, you know, like, you know, I think back to when they like traded Cespedes for John Lester, you know what I mean? Like, or random, you know, like kind of things like that. Right. Like, this was a very clear, we are giving up for the short term. And it's just, that's so deflating. Like, for, you know, if you're an A's fan, and again, that why so many have disengaged or just done with this team too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just done with the team, it's done with the organization. I mean,
yeah.
they play in easily the worst stadium in Major League Baseball, and I've been at the Trop, and it's not even close. but, you know, the other thing, too, is, like, they raised season ticket prices. Yep. There were extracurricular activities going on in the stands at some points throughout the season, which we don't need to get into, but you, all of you listening probably can at least, you know, refer to what we're talking about there. But you know, there's a lot of things that you look at with the Athletics, and it's depressing. And I think the only way, to your point, that you can foresee a prospect 5 or 6 years from now being in this organization is if they're playing in Las Vegas or Portland or some other city, right?
Yeah, I mean, or there's been some shift that ownership has sold. You know what I mean? Like, just like it's
right.
And again, you know, again, you're listening to a BP podcast, so you know our you know, the general sentiments on site, you know, about, oh, you know, folks are listening, so they know the general sentiments about ownership, but it's like the A's are really in a class of their own. And that I think is saying something. Like, again, like, as, you know, as someone who's pretty hypercritical, as someone who of all ownership around the league, the A's are in just such a extra dimension of you know, lack of investment in their product, and also, like, just, again, yeah, like, lack of investment in, like, the community, in the fan base, right? Like you say, they're raising season tickets after the things they've done. I remember last year, God, is it Dave Cavill? I should know who the operating owner. I'm missing the name right now. But, like, got in a Twitter spat because the Giants had their attendance go down last year. So he was, like, responding to A's fans on Twitter talking about, well, why aren't you talking about the Giants not drawing like they used to? Like, just these, like just for an, again, like, it just shows the immaturity at the top, and again, it trickles down. Sorry, we should get to the prospects. It's important context, right?
Yes, exactly. I was about to say it's important context. And I mean, last question I'll ask about the Major League team. Who is the best player on the Major League team at this point? Is it because, like, I mean, it's not Seth Brown, is it?
Is it?
Is it Seth Brown? Is it Tony Kemp, who had, like, what, a 650 OPS last year? Like, who is the best player on the Major League team at this point?
I mean, it. Yeah, and again, like, there's probably some folks who will tell you Langeliers, you know, just because of what he does defensively behind the plate. Yeah. And, like, God, I mean, I think it's probably Seth Brown. Like, I think it probably is ultimately.
Unless you want to go with a reliever and say AJ Puck is the most talented player on the team. Like,
yeah, well, you know what? I mean, if you want, if we're doing gambling, you know, who knows? Maybe they figure out Shintaro Fujinami, and maybe that's the best player. I mean, like, it really is.
That's a fair
like,
one.
There's just, it's, yeah, it's all. Yeah, it's and again, it's not even a particularly young big league team. Like, they have some young players, but again, it's like they got Jesus Aguilar, Jace Peterson, you know, I guess Laurie. You know,
Tony
what?
Tony Kemp is 31 years old. Like, people don't realize that. Diaz, 32.
You know, again, I mean, he struggled a lot recently. I know he had the PEDs, but I think if I actually had to pick one player, I might pick Laureano. Just bet on a bounce back there, maybe. And even then, that's not, you know, but that's, I mean, I just liked him a lot pre-injury/suspension anyway. So, but yeah, it's dark. It's because that's the thing, is it's not even a team where you, like, see pieces that, you know, they didn't do we'll get guys who can move at the deadline. They basically kind of done we are going to fill in the roster with, like, cheap 1 year vets or cheap vets. And then we're kind of just, I mean, again, we'll talk about the criticism I have. Again, I think it's very apparent if you're listening, I'm not a big fan of the vision that the A's have taken, but there is a level of like, they do have a good amount of prospects in the upper minors. And it seems very clear that their approach is just going to be, we know we're going to suck. We're going to sign some veterans to fill the holes until those prospects show any signs of life at AAA. And then they'll be in the big leagues. And we hope we, you know, we hope a couple emerge. We hope we can, you know, form a competitive lineup. And then, you know, maybe we win 75 games this year, but that, you know, then we're in positions to, you know, approach 500 next year. Again, that's, I think, you know, if you were to get the sales pitch on it, that is kind of what they're doing. But that means until the rest of those prospects get there, it's, you know, pretty unexciting at the big league level.
Last thing I'll say, and then we'll move into the farm system. Estimated payroll per roster resource at this point for 2023, $58 million. That speaks for itself. But let's get into the farm system, because even though it is underwhelming with respect to what they probably should have gotten in trades last year, it is, I think, fair to say it's slightly below average. And so that means that there are some interesting guys at the top of the farm system. But if you had to broadly define the A's farm system, how would you go about doing that?
I would say, too, and granted, again, I'm someone who's been pretty focused on West Coast farm system. I don't necessarily have a great landscape in the league, so this may be a bit off, but I think I'd still say they're in a slightly above average farm system too. I think if I were like doing a system rankings, again, I know mostly NL AL West farm systems a lot better than the rest, but I would guess they'd fall in that 10 to 14 range is where I'd put them. I think it gets at, and you know, Jarrett is written on the site about this a lot, like the A's appear to be following a player development scouting model that just appears to be different than the most modern one, or at least I should say it seems to be one that's tracking from a few years ago. They are targeting, you know, like I think that's where we can kind of get into with this system. They've targeted, generally speaking, particular types of hitters, which has either been incredible defensive players or incredible bat-to-ball skills, sometimes in combination, sometimes not. And, you know, I was looking at it in, I did kind of a summary of the system when I was writing it up, and it does very much feel like the A's strategy has seemed to be almost like they are targeting prospects if that prospect has a 70 or 80 grade tool. And they don't necessarily, they can live with whatever potential quote-unquote fatal flaw that prospect has. And that's what I think makes the system honestly very interesting. Like, it is one where, again, there's a lot of players. Like, I think this system, no matter who you are as a prospect guy, you look at this top 10, you look at that 3 through 10 range, there's going to be, I think, two guys there that every person loves. It'll just be a different two. Because they have done a pretty good job. And honestly, you could probably go like 2 through 15, honestly, on this list, where they've targeted tools, and that said, they have very few, really not anyone who's has a very well-rounded set of them, and so that's where you end up with Estory Ruiz, right, who has incredible contact skills, incredible speed, should be an above average defender, at least league average defender in center, but his exit velocity data and, you know, his hard hit data is concerning. It's very low. It's something that, you know, even though he's posted really good numbers in the upper minors, again, I think he had AAA last year, you're talking hitting 300 with a on base percentage north of 400, a slugging north of 450 last season. It's, you know, what we've seen from, you know, the exit velocity data, hard contact rates from prospects who've done this is like, there tends to be a plateau there when they get to the big leagues, that lack of hard contact, there's going to be a price to be paid. Now, again, you know, could that change a bit with the new shift rules? Again, I think marginally, but I don't think that's the difference between a great player and a bad player. That might be the difference between having a longer big league career, if anything.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Estuary Ruiz. AAA slash lines, especially in the PCL, are the biggest fake out in all of professional baseball, arguably. So I've always sided on the edge of caution there when it comes to putting too much weight into stat scouting, which, you know, we all are culprits of if we don't really go see a guy. But you know, the exit velocities are a concern, to your point. And we will get into that, but it's interesting. I once had a scout tell me that he'd love to be able to find the best players at one given skill set and put them into a player, and all of a sudden you've got like a Mike Trout or a Jacob DeGrom type of player. And I think that feeds into our conversation about Tyler Soderstrom, because you could make the case that he has the most fascinating upside offensively in the farm system. And if only he had a position that we were confident that he could play in defensively, he would be a lot higher on prospect list than he currently is. Is that fair to say?
I think so. And again, I think it speaks volumes to, you know, his hit tool and his offensive upside that he ranks as highly as he does again at this point. You know, I think he has one of the purest left-handed swings you will see. I mean, and with incredible bat speed to boot for it, right? And yep. And that's been the case since high school. It's, you know, as someone who, again, has primarily covered the Giants system, I remember the Giants being tied to him and they chose Patrick Bailey instead, and I think they've been regretting that decision ever since. And, you know, again, just an incredibly pretty swing, and one that elevates it elevates the ball as well, but it posts good exit velos, like all the things you want to see. Again, it does have a slight tendency to get, you know, a bit on the longer side. You know, one of the things that kind of sometimes the pretty swings look good because they maybe are taking a bit longer to get going. But yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. and again, this is a guy to me who, again, he's the top prospect in the farm system, has to me is on a all-star, borderline all-star trajectory, and I'm fairly certain he's either a first baseman or a DH, which tells you how much I believe in the offensive profile and how much people believe in the offensive profile. But also, as you mentioned, the reason, again, I have a 55 on him, I wouldn't have a problem with someone putting a 60 future value, kind of expected value on him either, a 55-60. But that's why this is a guy who, if we were just looking offensively, I'd be willing to think about a 65 or 70 type of potentially offensive, you know, upside here. Mm-hmm. But
God, if he was just able to play catcher, like that skill set behind the plate would be so tantalizing.
If he could just be viable at third or I mean, like, or left field even, and that's the, and again, I do think, you know, again, he's, I mean, again, it's one of those things when you say, you know, he should be athletic enough to play first base, like that's, you know, not necessarily saying a lot. And and again, a below average first baseman is one of the most frustrating. First base is one of the most frustrating positions to have a below average option, just because, you know, they're involved so much, and it's also so easy to find ones who are at least average.
Right.
And so that's, I think you're right. Again, it gets into, like, you know, and then again, you're looking at two prospect, or the, I should say, I've been calling Langley as the second best prospect in the system. He's the second best, like, under 25 guy, because he, you know, exceeded his eligibility last year. You know, you're right. Looking at him on the flip side, right? Who's the other thing, right? Like, he's, again, ready to, you know, be a Gold Glove caliber catcher for all intents and purposes. But that left-handed swing is long and does not come with the same bat speed that Soderstrom does.
Yeah, it does. And you brought up some of the other positions that you think you could play. If you had to put your money on one position that he ultimately plays more than the others, which one would you say that would be?
Oh, I think it's first base or DH at this point. I don't think he's going to find a way to, and again, I think partly too, to be fair to him, and I think this isn't uncommon for guys, is, you know, they'd probably be a bit more patient with his defense if he wasn't such a good hitter. You know, like, again, looking at the A's roster, like, I think he's, again, he could hit a snag at AAA this year, but I think he's probably going to do well enough at AAA. The A's are going to be bad enough. You know, who knows if they trade Seth Brown at midseason especially, but even if they don't, like, I think they'll, you know, be in need for assignment. I think he's probably in the big leagues this year, and just, you know, he's been challenged consistently and he's performed admirably. Again, he's put together, he's always looked, I know, what is he, 22, 23? Yeah, he just turned 22. So it's like, yeah, you know, he's always performed, like, he's always looked like he belonged at every level, despite being far younger than his competition. And it's just, I think he needed to be not as good a hitter to get the time defensively to have even a shot at sticking, to have a legitimate shot sticking behind the plate, or to take the time to learn a whole new, you know, other, you know, type of position. So I really think it's going to be a case of, I think he's probably going to be a, you know, below average, maybe league average first baseman, which probably just makes him a DH because, you know, if again, like I said, if you know, it's so easy to find better defensive options at first base for a team like, you know, especially for a team like the A's that, you know, is always kind of generally going for guys who aren't as doing as much offensively to fill out the roster. Right. So
I will point out that typically catcher defense is something that you can improve specifically on the margins of the framing game. You know, you're not going to be able, I don't think, to make drastic improvements within framing because it's all about, it's not just about your hand positioning, but it's about what you do behind, you know, once that pitch is actually in the glove, and it involves the strength of your wrists, a lot of athleticism. Like, it's not just a whole art craft. It's certainly part art, but it's also, you know, the physicality and, you know, maybe give it one more year behind the plate. But I think, you know, to your point, it is more likely that he will be a first baseman at this point. But
yeah, and I think my biggest concern with him too is, again, like given, you know, recent rule changes, given where Major League Baseball is heading to, like having a strong arm is, you know, like I think more important than, yeah, you know, it might have been before, sort of the trends we've seen the last couple of years. And Soderstrom, that's the easily the weakest part of his defensive profile. Again, there was I think he didn't play that much at Double A. He only had 16 games behind the plate, but he caught 2 of 22 base stealers at Double A. I think too, that's the other element, which is again why I think he moves, is the arm is fine, but it's the fundamentals are, you know, just not developed to the place they need to be to, you know, get, you know, again, an average arm behind the plate or even a slightly above average arm behind the plate. Unless you have above average athleticism, defensive skills behind the plate, it's not going to play like that, right? Because that's I'm, you know, being critical here, but again, it's because the standard is so high defensively for catchers, right? Again, it's why a guy like Langeliers is well regarded despite the relative questions about his offensive upside.
So suffice to say that Soderstrom will probably not be catching Kyle Muller for the next 6 years, which brings us to number two on this list, that being Kyle Muller. And, you know, Kyle Muller's kind of always been an enigma to me because I've always thought he's had good stuff. Going back to when I was working for the Braves, you know, the stuff was obvious. But, you know, the question for him has always been, will he throw enough strikes? And he's always been sort of inconsistent. He's already 25, which is hard to believe. But there were some signs of progress last year, right? So, you know, what do you think that the A's saw that, you know, got them enticed to make him part of that big trade for Sean Murphy?
Yeah, I mean, again, I know the A's are doing in-depth scouting. It does really seem like, though, given the prospects they have targeted in these trades, they've done a lot of box score. Like, they've relied heavily on numbers models. Again, we touched on Ruiz earlier. But again, like, you know, he's a guy who, you know, at Triple A last year, you know, after having a decent cup of coffee in the big leagues the year prior, like, you know, held up well. I think he ended up throwing nearly 150 innings on the season. He had, yep, you know, I think I want to say the 11.5 Ks per nine innings. His walk rate got cut down. Again, it's still higher than you'd probably want it, but, you know, he cut down the walk rate. Again, he looked like he was ready for the next step. And granted, he did get cuffed pretty hard in his, I think, three appearances with the Braves. But again, that's a super small sample. So again, like, I feel at this point, I think, and again, there's all, again, pitchers' age is not, I think, as useful as it is for hitters, just because there tend to be minor adjustments or random kind of steps forward or steps back that kind of come out of nowhere just because of the variance with all that goes into pitching. But I do think at this point is, like, Muller, you know, he's been a guy who's been viewed as a very high variance prospect because, like you mentioned, the questions were on the command, the questions were on the control, but he's always seemed to have it, like, a three really good potential big league offerings, like potential front end kind of stuff if he was able to locate it consistently. And I think at this point, I think it's fair to say that he's on a trajectory to at least be able to, again, to slot into a rotation next year, potentially, you know, if things go well, be a three. But I still think he has a pretty good shot at this point of having a floor as a back end guy. And again, if you're the A's, maybe your pitching coaches, you know, make the right adjustment. You help him, you know, keep kind of on a trajectory of improving his command. And, you know, maybe you end up finding that he actually is closer to the guy, you know, the high end of that potential value.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you mentioned in the report that, you know, when he got up to the major league level, it's almost as if he pitched with less conviction, less confidence, and thus was kind of nibbling. And, you know, when you nibble in the major leagues, you're going to get hit hard, regardless of how good your stuff is. You know, so that's just one thing that I think will be important for him to build up some confidence. You know, because he's been optioned two times now, since his major league debut. So now that theoretically he would be able to get a rotation spot with the Athletics, you would hope that he'd get a little bit more consistency, more opportunities, which does bring us to number three, because I think Ken Waldichuk is another guy that the Athletics should be giving ample opportunities in the starting rotation. They did get him in the trade for Frankie Montas, and I think it's safe to say at this point that, you know, despite Luis Medina's tantalizing stuff, Waldichuk probably is the best prospect that was sent by the Yankees to the A's in that trade.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, you know, again, he's, you know, again, pitcher, right? Like, you know, very much, you know, knows how to pitch. Again, has benefits kind of from a kind of deceptive southpaw delivery. You know, all in all, just a good way. Like, he, again, looking at his profile, it's one of those things, you know, especially when I'm starting to like look at grades and obviously talking to folks, it's like, it's just one of those guys who it's like, he does kind of everything well. You know, it's like you're trying to figure out, you know, what are the things that could potentially cause a problem for him. And again, you know, there is the, you know, I think there is questions about, you know, does he lack kind of a true carrying pitch potentially? But, you know, again, you're talking about a guy whose fastball's mid-90s, you know, should be able to be useful, even if he's going to be a guy who's mostly going to have to rely on secondaries, right? But, and he has a slider, he has feel for, he has a changeup, he has feel for. Like, I think you're looking at a guy who, again, you pretty easily, I think, see slotting into the rotation next season. And yeah, no, and again, the A's are going to give these guys a long leash, which, you know, for, you know, a guy like Waldichuk, who I think, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, again, he looked pretty good in his pro debut last season. That said, big league debut last season, but, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he's a guy who maybe, you know, coming back this year kind of gets off to a rough start. And just, you know, again, has to kind of learn to trust his stuff, has to learn, you know, when to take chances with pitches and when to maybe let guys go, because he isn't necessarily someone, you know, like with Mueller. Like, I should mention, like, one thing with Mueller too is, you know, he had his slider, his like both of his off-speed pitches, their whiff rates have been about 40% in his big league stints, which is part of the reason why I'm pretty confident he has his back end floor, because I think he can just start relying less on that fastball if that ends up being a problem. And Waldichuk right. isn't necessarily going to have that same kind of get out of jail free card, but he knows how to pitch, and he's been someone who, again, has done well throughout the minors, and, you know, has, I think, all the pieces to step into a rotation next season.
He feels like a candidate to learn a sinker, or to throw a two seam slash sinker, you know, because the mid 90s fastball, kind of like what you alluded to in the report, doesn't really have the shape that you would want, so it really plays more like a low 90s fastball, and from the left side, that's probably not going to get it done. So, you know, do you think that a two-seamer or sinker would be, I mean, that probably seems like the logical approach to see at least what you have there, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's something to play with. I think, I mean, if I'm sort of building the pitcher out, I think my hope for his development, sure, if you're talking like a high upside outcome, is that I think the changeup is that if he ends up basically peeling back his reliance on that fastball to the point where it may end up being viable and like playing above its weight class, because that changeup is good enough if he can continue to develop that feel where that's potentially, again, it's not a plus pitch right now, but if he got it to that place, which I think it could, You know, again, like I think, you know, change ups can be a kind of a, you know, a multiplying factor, right, for heaters. Mm-hmm. So I think it does depend ultimately, I think, on how that changeup plays at the big league level going forward. Again, I mean, you're right in the sense of like, if he can figure out the sinker and two seamer, definitely. But I think in terms of whether the four seamer is something he just has to abandon, which, you know, again, there's been plenty of pitchers who we've seen that with. And so that's, I think, going to be the early test.
So let me ask you this as we move to number four, Mason Miller. How clear cut was the top three, or did Mason Miller really give Waldichuk and perhaps even Mueller a run for their money when you were going through the list?
I had, and this is one of the things, you know, it's a collaborative process, and, you know, I was the point person on the A's with BP, but, you know, I take in, you know, input, and we kind of work things back and forth. I had Miller ahead of Waldichuk at three, mm-hmm. but, you know, again, you know, sort of polling other folks, you know, collaborating with other folks, getting other people's intel and stuff. Waldichuk ended up getting that third spot. But I mean, again, and so much of it is just uncertainty with Miller. Again, I didn't really necessarily have a problem with that because, you know, whenever you're volleying for a guy who the case against them is, well, they've thrown 12 innings in the past 2 years, that's a pretty hard case to argue with. You know, I'm not gonna walk the plank for that take. But I mean, he's definitely a guy who, if you're looking at this list, which again, as I've been quite critical of the lack of upside, this is a guy who could be like a top 30 prospect in baseball by the end of the year, right? Like this is a guy where if you're talking yourself into a dream scenario for the A's, and particularly the A's farm system this year, how does it take that jump? It's Mason Miller ends up having a healthy year, handling a workload, you know, showing that his the high 90s fastball that's touched 100, his mid 80s slider that looks plus, like that they hold up as a starter. Even, you know, and he's thrown a changeup a bit. We'll see where it's at this season. But even if it's not where it's at, I mean, the fastball and slider, again, very short outings because, again, dealt with injury and the A's have been cautious with him. But the fastball slider look big league ready, and obviously they're trying to see if he can stick in the rotation, as they should. But the fastball slider looked like, okay, we got at least a high end reliever here. If other things don't work out pretty soon,
I mean, you could make a case that Miller, if he hits his 90th percentile outcome, that is the best 90th percentile outcome in this entire farm system.
Oh, I think easily. I guess maybe if it depends where you are in Sarstrom's defense, if a 90th percentile outcome gets him to catcher, that would be the only thing I think.
I don't even think 90th gets him to catcher, honestly.
I agree. Yeah, and so that's where, I think that's a pretty compelling case. Because, yeah, I think, again, the question with Miller is ultimately workload. Again, if you go back to his college and pro career, which starts in 20, he went to college in 2017, he's never thrown more than 100 innings a year. He's never thrown 100 innings a year. And so that's where, again, the obvious questions about, is this guy going to be able to start? Is this guy going to be able to handle, you know, even 140 innings in a season, let alone 180 or 160? And so that's going to be the question. That said, I mean, you're right. I think when you get into that 90th percentile outcome with him, you're talking about best pitchers in baseball type of ace caliber starting pitcher.
Oh baby. Yeah, I am so in on this profile. Like, as I've said on other podcasts, lean into the volatility, you know? Yeah. And the Athletics farm system just doesn't have enough of these guys.
Yes.
Where, like, I'm willing to put my stamp on them, assuming that they can stay healthy. Like, they've got my stamp of approval. You know, if I was building an organization, a farm system from the bottom up, like, I would just try to fill it with as many Mason Millers as possible and just see what sticks.
Yeah, and that's where kind of, you know, the A's, it's like the only real swings they took in the trades that, you know, kind of match that is Medina, probably.
Medina,
right?
And
again, which I like, he's not, you know, in the system top 10, but yeah, you know, bet on that upside, give it a shot. But yeah, no, I totally agree, and I think he's someone who, again, we've been doing a lot that's telling A's fans to not be excited. Mason Miller's a dude to be excited about. Mason Miller's a dude who, when he, you know, it's like there's those one inning guys, right? Like a scout can see, you know, sees one inning a pitcher, and that's the pitcher they can't shut up about for the next 3 months. And that's the kind of guy Mason Miller was.
And it's funny because I think Jordan Diaz at number five in many ways could be the hitting equivalent of this, right? Because, you know, he hits the ball really hard. He makes a lot of contact in the zone, does chase a bit, right? But there are a lot of things to be excited about. The only issue is, where is he going to play? And I guess also similar to Tyler Soderstrom, you know, that's also going to be an issue. Now, you know, we saw him make a major league cameo, had, what, 50 plate appearances, give or take. Mm-hmm. Had a low on-base percentage, but the quality of the contact was pretty interesting, and he had a 103 DRC plus in that time frame. So, you know, how confident are we that the numbers he put up in the minor leagues are going to translate to the big leagues, at least from an offensive perspective?
You know, again, it's like this is, you know, it's like everyone has their profile that's, you know, they fall in love with over and over again, even though, you know, they're probably overvaluing it. And this is my profile. Like, my profile is the dude who can hit, who no one knows where he can play. And, you know, maybe, you know, how well is he going to be able to elevate consistently, things like that. I mean, again, for those of you who know, I've covered my Giants farm system stuff. I've been a Diego Rincones fan for a while. And again, Diaz is a better prospect than Rincones has ever been. But in a similar way, like, I feel pretty good that this guy's going to be a good big league hitter. Like, I just, you know, and again, like, you mentioned that cup of coffee in the big leagues is like, this is a dude who started 2021 at high A, you know, started this past year at double A, makes that jump to the big leagues. And again, it's a small sample size, yes, but he has a strikeout rate south of 14%. Yeah. Hits the ball relatively
doesn't look overmatched at all.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those things like, you know, when you have a strikeout rate that low, are you, you know, swinging, you know, are you not being maybe, you know, as selective as you'd like? Sure. But this is not a over selectivity that I think ruins his chances of being a good big league hitter. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's something where, look, could he probably tap into more power if he was more selective? Yes. Like, would it probably be a good trade-off if he was a bit more patient? Yeah, I no doubt. And I think that's what the hitting coaches and player development staff, I imagine, will continue to work on with him. But even if he doesn't take a big step forward there, I still see, I mean, it's like, there's some guys you can look at and you're just like, I don't see how this guy ends up hitting below 265, 270. And if that guy's putting up the exit velo where you're like, and he probably should be able to hit at least 15 homers. Like, I've already got a floor of a pretty good player. And obviously, again, I'm not talking upside. Like, I'm just talking like, this guy has all the pieces that he should be, you know, a league average hitter feels like very conservative with a projection to me. And again, that's where, you know, the problem comes in with where is he going to play defensively, you know, and again, it's kind of with Soderstrom, and, you know, I tend to be on the conservative end with defensive productions. Like, I think he might just be a DH, and that could create problems in Oakland with Soderstrom and stuff, but, you know, that's a problem for another day.
I didn't even realize he was playing second base for them last year. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the thing. Wow. Is like, you know, is he, like, I really don't know. And again, so much is going to be right. Like, if he's a, you know, if he's a 260, 15 homer a year hitter, then the defensive profile just, I don't think is viable. Like, he's not going to have even though that's a league average hitter, I'd be very surprised if he's a versatile enough defensive player to stick around for too long. At the same time, I think, again, like, if I'm doing kind of, I see a guy who could be hitting, you know, 280 with 20, 25 homers a year. And that's a guy who you'll find, you know, you can deal with. That's a guy you'll find a place for him. Yeah. And again, like you mentioned, he played some second. I mean, let me see, because I remember he had some of the most atrocious fielding percentages I looked at. I know they're not.
-4 outs above average at second base on 37 attempts.
Yes.
That is hard to do.
Now, granted, I'm pretty sure that, yeah, see, they threw him at second. He'd only played 3 games in the minors at second. Like, that's one of the things that, so he did get put in a pretty tough position.
God bless the Athletics, man.
But God, and again, like, this is, again, he played like 10 games in the minors at third base. He made 5 errors. Like, he had a 75% fielding percent. That was it. I knew there was some absurd. And I love it when you get the just atrociously low fielding percentages on these.
The Athletics, you know, Craig Goldstein, the managing editor, always said about the Phillies last year that they cannot be remotely normal. God bless them for it. And I think the A's are like the bad version of cannot be remotely normal. I mean, Jordan Diaz at second base is quite interesting, I will say. But to your point, I mean, you are talking about a guy that, God, if he can just stick at third base, just even if it's below average and he can hit 280, like, you are going to take that 10 out of 10 times for the Athletics, yeah. Right? Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with the back half of the top 10, and we'll get Mark's personal cheese ball right after that. We're back with the back end of the top 10 here on the Oakland Athletics Top Prospect Podcast here on the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network. And Mark, we're going to go to a guy that shares a name with one of my favorite players from the 2010s and 2020s, Maxwell Muncy, or Max Muncy for short. And, you know, I got to be honest, after he had a really bad 2021 debut in the complex, I think I jumped ship perhaps a little bit too early, right? And complex numbers can be very convoluted. You really shouldn't be making too much out of them. I made the mistake of making too much out of it. 2022 comes around, and all of a sudden, he put up a 108 DRC plus in low A as a 19-year-old. So, you know, he's about appropriate for the level from an age perspective. So he exhibited some interesting power as well. So there were enough interesting indicators, I think, to, you know, get him back into consideration, because I think last year at this time, you know, we were talking about, like, we don't know if he's going to be able to actually hit that much. And if he isn't, then he's not even a top 10 prospect in the system. Fast forward a year, he's now back, you know, in top five consideration. I imagine he probably was at least in that discussion. So what changed for Muncy, or what did we see that gave us some confidence that he can be, you know, an average regular at some point?
Yeah, I think, right, whenever you have a guy, even at low A, I'm pretty sure his strikeout rate, if it wasn't north of 30%, it was right in that range, right? So whenever you have a guy at the lower minors already showing that, you know, you need a story, right? You at least need kind of a level of, okay, well, there's, you know, there's all strikeouts aren't built equally, right? And the fact that Muncy put up well above average walk rates, the fact that the folks I talked to, the fact that you know, all the notes I had, like, he put together good at bats. Like, this isn't, he doesn't have a, you know, I think about, like, again, he doesn't have a Brian Reynolds profile, I don't think, but, like, Brian Reynolds was, like, a classic guy who, you know, you can kind of think about with this when he was drafted out of Vanderbilt. And I remember there was, you know, he struck out a lot, but it's like, well, he's having good at bats. Like, these strikeouts are coming from a good approach, and they'll probably decline as he progresses. And that was kind of what ended up happening with Reynolds. And we'll see. You know, time will tell with Muncy, you know, where that goes next season. But I think that's the thing that ultimately is that, one, the power played, because that's the other thing. Like you mentioned, the complex league struggles. It wasn't just that he was striking out. He wasn't doing anything. He wasn't impacting the ball. He was just, you know, totally overmatched. Which, again, some dudes, it's just the, you know, prep. Again, you know, you're drafting a high school prospect. It's like, you know, they haven't seen that competition. Some guys just are never able to make that jump. So the fact that he did, he shows up at low A, hits 16 homers, at, you know, more than 30 extra base hits. Again, I think his OPS for the level, right around, as you mentioned, like just above league averages, even with the strikeouts. And then you can kind of explain the strikeouts with, again, everyone you're talking to. He has a good approach. He knows what he's doing at the plate. Again, he has the strikeouts do come from, he has a longer swing. He has his bat speed, he's going to strike out a lot. And so that's going to be the question for him. That's ultimately why, again, I think there's some folks who would argue Muncy should have been ahead of Diaz, and why, you know, again, as I talked about with the profiles, I liked why Diaz ended up ahead of him for that reason. And again, Muncy's a guy who some folks think he'll be able to stick at shortstop. And again, he has the skill. Again, it's a lot of the, it's very hard, I feel like, because especially for fans who aren't necessarily deep in the weeds of shortstops, where it's like, you know, talking about a lower level shortstop, it's really, do they have the basic athleticism and arm strength to be able to stick? So few of them actually have the, you know, soft, you know, have developed the soft hands or first step at that point in time, you know, to like say he's going to stick at shortstop. So when I say he has the skills, he has the traits to stick at shortstop, that doesn't necessarily mean he's, you know, a very good defensive shortstop right now. He's not, but he has that trajectory, which obviously adds to the upside. I think for me, he is going to be, I think, an interesting, you know, some guys get caught in this trade-off, and it's going to be interesting, is that he has a kind of longer, lankier frame. Like, he has space to bulk up, and given the power he already has, given the power potential, I think, you know, there could be, and again, we'll see how he matures and whatnot, but he could hit for more power. Like, you could be looking at a guy who could end up with some plus power outputs there. But I think that will come likely at the cost of him being able to play shortstop. And if, you know, he has to move to a corner, and again, given where his strikeouts already are, that's, I think, going to be the kind of tension that his coaches and the A's player development staff is going to have to watch carefully. And it's going to be interesting to see how he does this year when he returns to high A, because when he did get a cup of coffee at high A, the power numbers dipped, the strikeout numbers went up. And obviously, again, that's not shocking. That's not unexpected. But again, he went to Lancaster. Like, that's a, you know, excuse me, he didn't go to Lancaster. Sorry, I'm way off. But, you know, he went to high A, you saw those things. So that's going to be something that we're going to be curious to see. Like, I think, you know, it's like some guys you can see heading into it, right? They're kind of in a make or break where you feel like by the end of the year, they either won't be a top 100, they either won't be a top 10 prospect in the system, or they'll be a top 100 prospect in baseball. And I feel like Muncy's kind of one of those guys I'd put in that category, right? Where he'll either hit enough at high A, he'll show that, you know, he'll show his advanced approach, he'll tap into his power, his abilities at shortstop will take, you know, his defensive progression will go wherever it goes. And, you know, then he's probably on a pretty good trajectory, or he'll be overmatched and have to repeat the level. And then, you know, those hit tool concerns are going to come roaring back pretty quickly.
Number seven, Zach Gailoff, I don't really think has similar issues, right? I think you kind of have a good understanding for how the game is going to translate to the major leagues. But, you know, to your point, it's probably not going to be as much of a high upside guy as maybe you'd like for a team that's in the middle of a rebuild and a guy like Muncy, right? But, you know, he put up a 102 DRC plus in almost a full season of double A ball. He did get a cameo at AAA and was fine there as well. Did hit for some power, actually. 5 home runs and 30 plate appearances. But again, AAA Las Vegas, extremely hitter friendly. So please keep that in mind. But, you know, Mark, as is the case with a lot of poorly run player development departments, whenever you come from the University of Virginia, whether you're, I believe, Griff McGarry or now Zach Gailoff, chances are good that you probably will see an increase in your overall talent profile once you reach a minor league system.
Yeah, and that's kind of exactly the tale we have here. You know, one of those dudes who it looked like there was power potential in college and never really played, and then he got to pro ball and hit for a bunch of power in his first pro year, and has climbed, you know, subsequently climbed the minor league ranks. I think he's one who, again, like you said, it's just I wish there was more upside. Like, again, I think, you know, I've seen some rankings that have him top 5 in the org, and I'm just lower just because, one, again, you know, he was drafted as a third baseman, but the arm's been iffy. He's, and the A's have already given him a good amount of reps at second base, which, you know, again, isn't a good sign. Like, if they thought he could stick at third, he would have been playing consistently at third.
I think there will be a premium on defense at second base, though, moving forward because of the new shift rule. So perhaps the shift to offensive focus at second base will disintegrate a little bit, and thus a guy like Gailoff, he might have a little bit more value at second base.
Well, the one thing I'll add to that too is he is a good athlete, and there were folks I talked to, there's some people who want the A's to experiment with him in the outfield, and again, it's like I've, you know, blindly trying to predict which guys can make the adjustment to the outfield and can. I've given up on that a while ago. He is a good athlete. Like I think, like, in terms of range and stuff, I think that's something that could be in the cards. But again, you know, reading fly balls off the bat, first step, all that stuff, like, you know, I don't think it's really, like, it's, I don't think that's worth taking into account in these kind of circumstances, because so few guys who are career infielders just make that transition so seamlessly. But yeah, I think he's one, again, he's pretty good across the board. Like, he's a pretty good hitter. He's a pretty good, you know, like, he has pretty good power the way it plays. Again, like I mentioned, he has plus power potential, but I don't think he has the cost it would take to max out that power is not going to make that worthwhile.
Yeah.
And so I think he's a guy who's going to be a pretty good player for a long time. Like, I think that's kind of where he's at. The one kind of red flag, I guess you could look at him multiple ways, is he's already shown very large platoon splits. And that's another reason why I dipped him down. Because he's a dude who has pretty consistently, since he turned pro, absolutely crushed lefties and been solid against righties. So, you know, that is another reason, I think. I think if he hadn't shown the platoon splits, I might have been more open to kind of knocking him up half a grade, or maybe even knocking him up the rankings, kind of being closer to, I think, where most other folks are with him. But that was just the thing is, again, I'm looking at a guy, I'm like, I see this guy looks like a pretty good player, but you know, when you're showing me the potential that you're going to fall on the short side of a platoon, I think that was kind of the final straw that made me like bump a guy like Muncy,
right,
even with the risk, like, bump a guy like Diaz, even though he has, yeah, even less defensive projection, right, over him.
Right. Because I think, like, you could make the argument that, you know, aside from Soderstrom, the real conversation for the best hitter in the farm system is Diaz versus Gailoff. And I think, yep, you know, to your point, the weak side platoon is probably what does Gailoff in that conversation. Thus, you know, Diaz is a little bit higher. But anyway, moving on to number eight, Gunnar Hoglund is a guy that was selected in the 2021 draft in the first round by the Blue Jays, having just gone through Tommy John surgery. So the Athletics knew that they were going to be trading for a guy that had Tommy John surgery. They still did it in the Matt Chapman trade. And, you know, listen, we really don't have enough information for what he's done in the minor leagues. He's pitched all of 8 innings in the minor leagues, right? But he did pitch in the SEC. He did. He was a dominant college performer in the best conference for the sport. So are we looking – is this another example of a guy where we're looking at the floor more so than the ceiling?
You know, I mean, I think that's definitely the – you know, I think probably the case. I will say this. I really liked Hoglund in college. Like, I was really high on him heading into the draft. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just, you know, some guys are better than the sum of their parts, right? Particularly with pitchers, right? And like, Hoglund was a dude who I just have always been pretty high on for that reason. He's just a dude who, again, you're talking about a well-rounded arsenal. You know, again, he's classic kind of low 90s. The fastball's not going to be great, but it holds up all right. And again, you're talking about it, like, really good command when we saw him at the college level. And again, why you were talking about the way he was able to dominate the SEC, because the dude knows how to pitch. The dude has good stuff and he knows how to maximize it. And, you know, that's just a kind of profile that I just wonder that we can tend to pigeonhole, right? Like, I feel like, you know, the future back end starter is the type of thing that, you know, we throw on a lot of different prospects, right? We throw it on guys who have good command and fringe stuff. It's what we throw on guys who have good stuff but fringe command, and sometimes it's something we throw. And I just feel like Hoglund's a guy who's like, he's better than that kind of profile, you know. And so, you know, I think that's why the A's valued him. And I don't, like, again, I've been critical of the trade returns they've targeted, but I liked kind of going for Hoglund and the Chapman deal, because, you know, they're only able to get him because of the TJ, because I think the Blue Jays would have, you know, wouldn't even be able to draft him if it weren't for the Tommy John.
That's a very good point.
And again, you know, it's not a surefire recovery, but at this point, like, it is something a lot of guys deal with and have shown the ability to come back from. And if he's the dude he was in college, I think he's a dude who could move quickly. I think he's a dude who profiles as a mid-rotation starter. And again, at this point, with what we know about pitching, with the way guys are able to develop and tweak their arsenal to, you know, discover new pitches in the middle of their careers to, you know, find another level of breaking balls. You know, if you got a guy who profiles as a mid-rotation starter, that's one big, you know, that's one discovery away from taking another step, right? So, again, the issue is, you know, like I said, I'm talking about Hoglin in college because we got three outings of his, I think two in the complex, one at low A. They were solid. You know, he looked like, a decent amount like the guy we saw before, but, you know, not enough. He'll get tested this year, you know, and it'll be one where, I think given the A system, you know, he either ends the year in the upper minors or we're concerned probably, but then again, I say that, you know, coming off TJ, he hasn't thrown much in the last couple of years. You know, he also might be limited 70 innings. And so that'll sort of be the other thing. And why, again, he's clocking in at number eight.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, he's interesting because he's a little bit of a deviation from the philosophy for all the pitchers above him in that, you know, this more stuff than command. Hoglin's a little bit more command over stuff, even though, you know, you like the stuff a little bit. I happen to like the stuff as well. So he will be one of the closest follows, I think, throughout spring training and in the early parts of the regular season in the minor leagues. But number nine is Asturi Ruiz. And I first heard about Asturi Ruiz around the trade deadline last year. I saw that this guy was having a ridiculous slash line in AAA and that you had to look at his stolen base numbers to really believe it. Well, sure enough, he had almost 50 stolen bases in AAA last year, was including that Josh Hader deal from Milwaukee to San Diego, and then was eventually sent to Oakland in the Sean Murphy, William Contreras three-team trade with Atlanta and Milwaukee. So he's been moved around a little bit, and we talked about him briefly earlier, but you're talking about a guy that does make contact, a guy that has elite speed, and you would imagine that that combination gives him a nice floor as a major leaguer, right? But the quality of the contact was so problematic that his contact and speed may not matter if he's hitting balls in the 20th percentile of max exit velocities.
Right, and that's the question. Like, again, this is, again, he stole 85 bases in the upper minors. You know,
Yeah.
So, and so, automatically, you know, it's very clear, like, this is a guy who's a difference maker on the base pass. And again, I want to say his percentage was also pretty good. I think he only got caught. He might have got caught double digits, but barely in the double digits. Like, he was a very effective base stealer as well. The speed is what makes him a playable in center. I will say his kind of instincts first step are not great. His reads aren't great. Although, again, that's the stuff that can improve. And so, you know, there's a story you could tell where he ends up a really good defensive center fielder as well, if he's, you know, able to kind of work on honing those parts of his game. And so that's where, yeah, I mean, I feel pretty good. Just the contact, the speed, you know, what quality of fourth outfielder he is. You know, whether he's an up and down 4A kind of fourth outfielder or fourth outfielder who sticks for 6-7 years, you know, it gets back to that hard contact. And again, the potential upside that, you know, again, I'm, you know, I think you're probably in this category too. I'm obviously in the category where, you know, again, like the exit velo data is in a place where there just aren't parallels who end up as above average hitters at the big league. Yeah. There just aren't really models you can point to. But at the same time, there's also an element of dude hit 330 last year with a 450 on base and a 530 slugging. And so it's like, they're, you know, like if, you know, some dudes can just hit, some dudes can adjust to circumstance, and, you know, maybe, like, again, if you're telling the story of how he exceeds that expectation, how he ends up an everyday center fielder, you know, borderline, again, because of the base stealing, like potential all-star center fielder, just because of some incredible base stealing numbers, if, you know, he can hit for average, right? Like, I think that's the way he can do that. Because again, as I mentioned, like, this isn't a dude who is not walking with his contact rate. I think that's also another separator. I think that's the thing, how you end up with the A's valuing him as highly as it is again, we're talking about elite base stealing ability. We're talking about the ability to play all three outfield spots. We're talking about ability to make contact, and we're talking about the ability to make contact while not doing it at the expense of working a walk. And again, given his speed, you know, if he's walking even in he's walking in the minors, upper minors, because he's earning it. So I think all those are there, where, again, it's interesting. And again, you know, like, all of these guys, again, like, there's almost no one here who doesn't do something special. you know, like, again, even Hoglund's like command for where he was as a prospect was pretty special. You know what I mean? Like, all these guys, they like it does seem to me, the more I looked at it, because at first I was like, oh, the A's, they're targeting all these safe guys first. And I think that's partially true, but it also does feel like, again, they're like, they need to do something well. Right. And like Ruiz, the reason he's been traded multiple times is probably because of the concerns we have. But the A's are saying, yeah, that may not be it, but dude, this guy's an elite base dealer. This dude has some elite ability, some special talents. And, you know, let's take a chance on our player development. Let's take a chance, maybe on him. And because, again, if that one tool, if he's able to hit, for a little bit more exit velo, this dude could be a perennial all-star and very exciting.
Yeah, just imagine if Billy Hamilton was like 15% better offensively. That is like a pretty good outcome for a Story Ruiz, but I absolutely think it's in the range of outcomes, right? Now, he's not going to be as good of a defender as Hamilton was in center. Hamilton was a Gold Glove caliber center fielder, but from a base stealing perspective and a potentially better bat, call it 85 WRC plus guy year in, year out basis, like, at center field, that speed, like, that's going to be a difference maker. So, what I will be personally watching is the chase rate and the walk rate, right? If he's not chasing, if he's continuing that trend of laying off his outside the strike zone, it continues to walk, I'm all in. I just need to see it at the major league level to really buy in on it. So that will be the one that I'm watching with the Story Ruiz. And that brings us number 10 on this list, that being Freddie Tarnick. And Freddie was also acquired in the Sean Murphy trade. He also had a cup of coffee last year in the major leagues, which seems to be a recurring theme for a lot of the guys here in the back half of this top 10, outside of Waldichuk, obviously. But, I had the opportunity to watch Tarnick when I was with the Braves. And, I always thought that the fastball was what was going to really get him going. He has a very aesthetically pleasing curveball that, I don't know about you, but I don't, it's more of like the aesthetic pitch more so than a swing and miss pitch, right? But I think overall, like, he's already made it to the major leagues, and so I think at this point he's probably not going to be the rotation to start opening day, but he's going to be their long man and probably would be the first guy up if anything were to happen to any of the five guys ahead of him.
Yeah, I think it's, it's the fastball is so good that the reason he hasn't dominated, it's pretty clear, is the secondary. I think you're right in that the curveball is his best secondary pitch, but it is not a close to a plus offering. I do think it's one of those that it's pretty to watch. It puts up good highlights, but it's not something that is putting guys away. And that's where, again, you do wonder if he's someone who, either you play with, trying to give kind of a sharper break to, you can play with there, because, again, given how good his fastball is, he can probably stick in the rotation, or at least in a swingman role, and giving you some pretty good bulk innings, if he can just find another pitch that can get some swing and miss, and he doesn't have that right now. And that's why, again, like, I think he probably ends up in the pen unless he's able to do that, because the fastball is so good. It's a mid-90s pitch, good characteristics. Throw that in the pen and it adds any velo. That's a really good back end. The foundation of a really good back end reliever.
I definitely agree. And I think that's a pretty good sum up of him, at this point, because when he came into the farm system, he was pretty young. He was drafted out of high school. He's going to be 24 now, and he's already had a few options. So the A's have to see what they have in Tarnick, and I think the best way to do that is definitely, in the bullpen. And ever since they lost Lou Trevino, who wasn't even that good last year for them, but that has opened up a number of opportunities in that bullpen, alongside AJ Puck, who probably is the best reliever on that team. But now, looking outside the top 10, I'm curious as to, who your personal cheese ball is. Maybe a guy that, I don't want to say wouldn't make the top 20 otherwise, but, is a guy nonetheless that caught your eye that you might be higher on than other people would be.
I think it's probably either Denzel Clark getting into the high variance, Or on the total flip side of it, Ryan Noda, the Rule 5 pick from the Dodgers. I think sort of two opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of prospects. Clark is the ultimate big, you know, big power plus speed, good athlete, strikes out a ton, does not have a great hit tool. If he has a 45 grade hit tool, he's going to be a long time, have a big league career. And then Noda, on the other hand, who's a dude who, you know, late round pick, kind of slowly climbed the minor league ranks and just absolutely is kind of mashed. And again, you know, he played the PCL last year, and so obviously you have understandable concerns about that. Gets, you know, left off the 40 man by the Dodgers, and, you know, the A's scoop him up. And again, just one of those dudes who does a lot of things pretty, like, a lot of things well, and, you know, he should get a chance to play with Oakland this year, and I'm curious to see if he does it. Because again, he's one of those dudes too, is when you looked at, you know, again, he doesn't have like exceptional power, but his exit velocity numbers were solid. He walks at an elite rate. He puts the ball in play at a good rate. Like, you know, I don't think he's ever, you know, again, I think he had 25 homers last year at the PCL. I don't think he's a, you know, 25, 30 homer hitter. I think he's probably ends up in that kind of, you know, 13 to 17 range. But I still think he could end up being kind of a surprising contributor this year for the A's. Again, obviously, they got Seth Brown right now. So, you know, again, figuring out how he gets his ABs. But
I got to find a way to beat out Seth Brown, man. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, listen, it's a very interesting farm system. And I think we are both in agreement that despite how interesting it is, it should be better, right? So the onus is going to be on the Athletics to develop these guys, to continue to draft well, continue to try to find guys in the later rounds, which they have been pretty good at. I think all things considered, for the last decade, they've probably been an above average player development organization. Now, to your point from earlier, the question is, have they moved on with the times? That I still think is a little bit unclear, and I think we'll gain more clarity on that situation throughout this upcoming season. But, Mark, we made it through the Athletics in just a little over an hour, so I appreciate you hopping on to do this one. I know that we're going to be doing the Padres farm system tomorrow, which I'm sure will be interesting in its own right. But thanks for hopping on, man.
Hey, anytime. I really appreciate talking.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you all for listening to this latest edition of the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network. We'll see you guys next time.